Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents For Witch's Sake by Amy Boyles, narrated by Angela Daw. 1.
Everybody stand back! It's still growing! I threw out my arms, pushing my sisters, Serafina and Reed, as well as my maternal grandmother, Hazel Horton, out of the thing's path. Sarah, my younger sister by only 2 years, tossed a curtain of dark, glossy hair from her blue eyes.
Reed,
she shrieked.
What did you do?
Reed, a substantial 10 years younger than me, patted down burgundy curls that were frizzed out from the Alabama humidity. She had the rounded cheeks of youth and lovely, delicate features that made me a bit jealous. Of course, Sarah had those gorgeous blue eyes, tan and tone limbs, and sleek hair. Basically, I envied my sisters everything I could.
I didn't do anything, Reed stammered.
Sarah flashed our baby sis a dark look. Her eyes blazed.
You did something.
Reed summoned up all her 18-year-old angst and said,
I only told it to grow. I did exactly what Dylan said.
Every eye turned to me. I backed up. Listen, all I did was suggest she use a growth spell.
Well, it's growing, my maternal grandma said. It's almost to the roof.
I shielded my eyes and glanced up at the vinca gone wrong. The pink flower that was only supposed to be about 6 inches tall stood a good 10 feet high, and it was still growing. Okay, so in case you haven't guessed, I'm a witch. In fact, my whole family is. Well, Reed wasn't, at first, but several weeks ago, her powers came in. We've been trying to teach her magic, but since Sarah and I are still learning ourselves, it's been an interesting process. The vinca on steroids would be a case in point.
Someone's got to do something, Sarah said. If this thing keeps sprouting, we're going to have the whole town over here.
Or the Witch Council, Reed added.
Great. The Witch Council. My family and I had accidentally worked magic in front of non-magics, or regular people, before, but this was a first. A giant flower that resembled Jack's beanstalk could get us in serious trouble. Why? Because witches aren't supposed to work magic in front of regular people. They're not supposed to know we exist, even though we live side by side most of the time. Grandma placed her withered hands on my shoulders.
Tell it to stop, Dylan. You can do it.
I heaved a deep breath and focused my magic. A swirl of power ignited in my core. I lifted my hands and felt a surge beam into the flower. The leaves shook and trembled. I stopped breathing. It shot up 3 more feet.
It didn't work,
Grandma mused.
That's the understatement of the year, Reed countered.
We all inched back as the flower climbed past the roof. I heard the screen door crack open.
Does someone want to tell me why a giant flower is threatening to eat your house?
I groaned. Turning around, I came face to face with Roman Bain, chief detective of Silver Springs, Alabama, and my boyfriend. Sun-streaked blonde hair grazed his shoulders. Green eyes smoldered just above high cheekbones, and the seams of his clothes tugged at his chiseled frame. He sighed.
I really can't leave you alone for more than a day, can I?
I just don't think that's really true, I said.
Why's that?
I crossed my arms, feeling smug. Because this would have happened whether or not you were here. I didn't do it. Reed did. He cocked his head toward Reed.
You had Dylan teach you, didn't you?
Reed nodded. Roman walked over, kissed my forehead, and said,
I rest my case. Not one day.
Traitor, I said.
Not sure how that applies.
Me neither, but I'll find a way. I threw up my hands. What are you doing here anyway? You never drop by without calling. He leaned over and murmured in my ear,
I had something important to tell you, but it looks like it'll have to wait.
Why? Roman cocked his head toward the vinca.
That flower's about to be poking Jack in the rear end.
Very funny. It's not that high. Roman nodded behind me.
Maybe you should take a look.
I gasped. The flower on nuclear steroids had jetted up to the chimney.
Seriously, Dylan, Sarah said. The neighbors will start to notice.
Grandma twirled the strand of pearls around her neck.
It's not the neighbors you should be worried about. It's the witch council. They find out about this, and it's curtains for you girls.
My jaw dropped. For us? This was your idea. You wanted the Vinkas to be bigger. Grandma shook her head.
Bigger, Dylan, not apocalyptic.
She wiggled a finger in the air. The paper-thin skin was nearly translucent from old age.
There is a difference.
Not that it matters now. I nibbled on a corner of my index finger and spat out a square of nail. So fix it, Grandma. You're the most experienced out of all of us. Grandma lifted her hands and mumbled something. The flower shook, rattled, and sprang even taller.
This is bad, Reed said.
Grandma shook an enraged hand at the plant.
It's taken on a life of its own, girls. It doesn't want to stop growing and is using our own magic against us.
You could say that again, I said. So what do we do? Grandma snapped her fingers. A World War II army helmet appeared in her hands. She strapped it on and said,
We go to war, that's what.
Can't you just wipe the thing's memory?
Sarah asked. Okay, so I know that sounds weird, right? Like, really weird, but it's true. One time, I worked some magic on a pair of scissors, charging them to life. Well, the scissors had so much fun that they didn't want to stop cutting and dancing. That's right, the inanimate object wanted to live. Apparently, that's also what was going on here. Grandma fisted her hands on her hips.
No time to wipe its memory, Dylan. It will fight me all the way to the end. We have to take drastic measures.
Roman strode toward it.
Those drastic measures better include stopping the neighbors from noticing.
Suddenly, a round of screen doors opened.
What's that thing?
Looks like a giant flower.
Well, what's it doing?
Looks to me like it's growing. I rubbed my face, groaning. Apparently, I lived in a neighborhood filled with Sherlock Holmeses. Not. The house phone's shrill peal broke through the murmur coming from our neighbors. I raked my fingers through my hair. No one answer it. It's probably someone calling to see what's going on. We've got to contain this, like yesterday.
I'm on it,
Roman said. He strode into the house. In an emergency situation such as this one, I was almost surprised he didn't break into a sprint or even a quick walk. No, ma'am. Roman Bane was cool as a cucumber in absolutely every situation I'd ever seen him in. Me, on the other hand, I had rings of sweat staining my armpits that I was certain would never wash out. I whirled on my grandmother and sisters. Let's try one more time to stop this thing. If we don't, we'll have Jonathan Pearbottom up our rear end so high he'll be poking out our noses.
Dylan, gross, Reed said.
Sorry, let me try to be politically correct while I'm facing a giant flower that looks ready to eat our town. Sarah clicked her tongue.
It wasn't even PC, it was just gross.
Grandma clapped her hands.
Girls, no time to argue. We've got flower power against us. We need to stop it.
The four of us focused, generating what felt like enough magic to light a city. We shot it into the flower. Everything stopped for a moment. The flower rose 5 more feet as the ground rumbled. Thick, branch-like roots erupted from the soil, extending outward and latching onto more ground. A quake splintered through the neighborhood.
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure we're toast. Councilwoman Gladiolus is going to be so mad at us,
Reed said. Don't say that, I hissed. Besides, we're protected from being punished. That was true. Several months ago, we'd helped solve a murder mystery involving a witch. Because of that, Councilwoman Gladiolus gave us immunity from punishment for using our power in front of regular people. To be honest, I think she felt sorry for us. Up until that point, we'd accidentally worked a lot of magic in front of people. I believe she thought that at the rate we were going, we'd be boiled alive in no time. Yep, that's the punishment for letting people see your magic. Gross, right? Thank goodness we were exempted. Sarah stepped back.
Dill, the thing's the size of a skyscraper. No way we're getting out of this.
I glanced up, shielding my eyes in order to get a better look. My stomach crashed to my feet. Dear Lord, wavering high overhead and looking ready to take over the United States airspace, lived a Vinca that shouldn't have existed. No doubt about it. We were toast, burned to beyond a crisp, leaving nothing but skeletal remains. Once the Witch Council found out about this, we were dead. Maybe I could go into hiding. If I left now, I could grab a bag of clothes and get out of town. As I started to think that was the most brilliant idea ever, the door crashed open. Roman strode to the flower, an axe in his hand.
Stand back. Way back.
I've got you blanketed,
Grandma said. Don't you mean covered? I said.
No, Dylan, and it's not nice to correct your elders.
Never stopped me before, I mumbled. The head of Roman's axe bit into the flower. The plant shook, vibrating the earth.
What's going on?
I heard one of the neighbors say.
What in the world?
Another shouted. Roman swung again. The steel chomped a chunk of stem from the vinca. The plant shuddered. It stopped growing, hovering as if suspended. The flower existed in that half second between standing still and falling. I sucked in air. The vinca lingered, a soft breeze blowing its petals. It tilted forward as a sharp wind caught hold of it. Then the thing plummeted to the ground.
Now!
Roman shouted at Grandma. She waved her hands, and just before the vinca broke fences, trees, and roofs, it vanished, as if by magic, which was technically what happened. A breath of air shot from my lungs in relief. I glanced at Roman. He dropped the axe to the ground. A dark expression etched his face.
You okay?
I said. Without a word, Roman crossed to me. The worried look fell away, and he wrapped me in a hug. He smelled of pine and musk. I melted into his arms, letting my anxiety wash off.
I'm fine, he whispered, stroking my hair. But are you okay?
I leaned back, and my gaze locked with his. Other than his sea-green, soul-searching eyes turning my knees to jelly, I was fine.
I'm okay. I'm glad you showed up when you did.
He winked at me.
I must have some sort of sixth sense when it comes to you.
What do you mean?
I can sense when you're about to get in trouble.
I poked his ribs. I thought you came to tell me something important.
I'm surprised you remember with all the fuss about the flower.
I rolled my eyes. I figured by important you meant we were going to Paris. He lifted a brow.
Want to?
I bit the inside of my cheek. Does that mean we'd have to be alone, like, all the time? It was Roman's turn to roll his eyes.
Yes, and it also means you'll see me naked.
My face heated to smoldering.
Well,
he grinned.
Don't worry, darling. I'll count you in.
I had not, up to this point, seen Roman naked, nor had he seen me. He grabbed my hand and kissed the fingers.
I'm serious. If I hadn't shown up, that thing would be halfway to asking God about life's deepest secrets.
Very funny. He shrugged.
You love me anyway.
It was my turn to grin. You're right, I do. He wrapped me even tighter and kissed my cheek.
Thank goodness for small miracles.
I peeled away and gave him a wobbly smile. So, the whole neighborhood saw that.
Yep.
Looks like we've got a lot of memory wiping to do, Grandma. Grandma lowered her arms.
Already done.
Good thing. I'd hate to get into trouble with the council, or even the witch police. Roman took my hand.
Me too.
The screen door opened.
Dylan Appel.
My blood froze. I turned around. There stood Witch Police Inspector Jonathan Pearbottom, arms crossed, face bent into a sour expression, parrot-shaped nose looking especially parrotish.
Dylan Appel, he repeated. You and your sisters are under arrest for working magic in front of non-magics.
All feeling left my limbs. I glanced at Grandma. She wrung her hands.
I always hated Vinkas.
2. We huddled inside the craftsman cottage my sisters and I shared with my grandmother and her bodyguard, Nan. Jonathan Pearbottom stood with his back wedged into a corner. Satisfaction flickered in his eyes. Was he gloating that he'd finally caught us doing something wrong, something he could put us away for?
You can't arrest us, I stammered. We have protection from the council, you know that. Our protection is based on the fact that we're not very good at witchcraft, and sometimes we make mistakes, just like now. It was an accident. We can't be punished for accidents.
Jonathan whisked a scroll of paper from under his cape and unfurled it. Yes, he wore a cape, like every time I saw him.
This is the warrant for your arrest. I have 3 councilmen's signatures. That little earthquake you set off was magical enough to feel its impulse miles away. It wasn't the working of magic that got you into trouble, but the magnitude.
Sarah shook her head.
You can't kill us for an accident.
Pearbottom shook his head.
You don't understand. You're not being boiled alive. I'm not punishing you for being bad on purpose. This punishment you brought on yourselves for being careless.
He handed the scroll to Grandma. Her eyes scanned the paper.
This looks tight as a button.
She handed the vellum to Roman, who started reading.
I can't go to jail,
Reed wailed, throwing up her arms.
I just got my magic.
Pearbottom laughed.
You're not going to jail.
Reed glanced up. Hope lit her face, like bulbs on a Christmas tree.
We're not?
No,
Roman said, glancing up from the paper.
He's putting you under house arrest.
House arrest? I said. What? Pearbottom smirked.
House arrest, without magic, for 2 weeks.
What? I said. We have businesses to run, lives to live. Pearbottom flicked a speck of dirt out from under his fingernails.
You should have considered that before growing a giant flower that left your neighborhood in awe. Accident, I snarled.
The inspector snapped his fingers.
2 weeks of house arrest.
He pointed to the fireplace. A wooden box shimmered into existence. On it were segments for days, hours, minutes. The counter read 14 days exactly. A second later, it wound down to 13 days, 23 hours, 59 minutes. Great. Well, at least I didn't have to guess when the punishment would be over. I felt an odd weight tug at my ankle. When I looked down, I saw an iron anklet clamped to my skin.
What's that? I said.
It's your house arrest warning anklet,
Grandma said. I glanced at her.
You know of these things?
She fluffed the bottom of her silvery hair.
I have lived a little, Dylan.
What's it do? That, Pearbottom said, is how we keep tabs on you. It will remain silent while you're in the house, but as soon as you step out your door, it will start to beep, very faintly, warning you that you're about to walk past your perimeter. As long as you stay inside the yard, you're fine. But step 1 foot on the sidewalk, and the anklet will blare.
He thumbed his finger over his nose and gave me a smug grin.
Next thing that happens is I'll show up.
And?
Reed said.
What happens then?
His lips coiled into a scary smile.
Serious trouble happens then. Don't cross your barrier and you won't have to find out.
Great,
Sarah said.
What else?
No magic,
he added. We gasped.
Only Dylan is banned, he added. Why me? Because you're the one who seems to be the instigator.
I fisted my hands to my hips. How do you figure that? He tugged at the lapels of his cape.
Just something I know.
He clapped his hands together. I crossed my arms.
How can you stop me from using magic?
Pearbottom snapped his fingers.
Like this. A rush of power scooped into my core. I jutted forward, extending my hands to stop from crashing onto the rug. I clutched a chair and held tightly as the surge of magic seemed to pull the soul from my core. I latched on, fighting to stay upright. My eyes drifted up to Pearbottom. He smiled like a reptile. Ugh, you know, I really don't like him. When it was over, I eased into a chair and mentally poked around for my power. Not a ball, nor a swirl, not even a wink of magic greeted me in return. It had been stolen away. "How'd you do that?" I said, gasping for air.
"Witch police secret. You can search for it as much as you like, but I've got it locked away. Don't worry, you'll get it back when your punishment is over."
"But where is it?" I demanded.
"Someplace where you can't access it."
Pearbottom's lip curled.
2 weeks, those are the terms. Break them and you'll see me again, and your punishment will be worse.
He tapped the lip of his bowler cap and vanished.
"Great," Sarah said, plopping onto a chair. "House arrest? Is he serious?"
"So it starts now?"
Reed said. I met Roman's gaze. His face was dark, distracted.
"Now," he said.
"Let's make sure." I marched to the front door, swung it open, and stepped through the threshold. The anklet blipped. I took several more steps, and the faint noise grew louder. There was no point in testing it all the way across the yard. What he'd said about the anklet growing louder would be true, and I really didn't want to see Pearbottom again so soon. Or, like, ever.
"Told you,"
Roman said.
"What's all the racket out here?"
Nan said, storming into the room.
"Does someone need me? Is there a fight I need to help out in?"
"None right now, Nan," Sarah said. "But we may need you soon."
Reed sank onto the couch.
"I mean, I'll be fine for 2 weeks. I can make it. But what about y'all? What about your stores? You can't run businesses from the house."
"Oh, no," I said. "She's right. What about them?" Sarah and I owned side-by-side stores down on Main Street. Hers was a bakery called Sinless Confections, and mine was a dress boutique called Perfect Fit, which it was. Both shops were magical by nature and had brought us some success in our little town. But we had a real problem. If the two of us couldn't leave the house, how were we going to keep our businesses open? I scanned the room, trying to come up with a solution. Then it hit me.
"Grandma, you'll have to go work at my shop, and Nan, you could fill in at the bakery."
All eyeballs circled back to me.
"What?"
Grandma said.
"I don't know how to make dresses."
"You don't have to make dresses," I said. "Only sell them." She adjusted the slew of clinking rings on her fingers.
"I think I'd be better suited at the bakery."
"Then go work at the bakery instead." I cocked my head toward Nan. "Nan, you work at the dress shop then, and Grandma, you'll get up at 4 a.m. and make muffins every day." Both women glanced at each other. I felt like there was some sort of telepathic conversation going on that the rest of us couldn't access. To be honest, it was probably a good thing.
"No," Sarah said. "I'll bake from here and give Grandma the goods each morning. Then she can leave."
"Do y'all think this could work?" I said.
Grandma pulled off the helmet she'd donned to go to war with the flower and tucked it into a cabinet.
"What's the worst that could happen?"
"Oh, please, no one answer that," I said.
"At least you've got your online business," Sarah said.
She was right. The past few months, I'd worked on amping up my website to bring in more revenue. The orders were trickling in daily, which was great, but it wasn't enough for me to close the shop and focus solely on that. Sarah and Grandma started working out the details when Roman came over.
"Hey," I said, trying to put on my biggest, brightest smile.
"It'll be okay," he said. "It's only for 2 weeks."
He was right, but the funny thing was, without magic in my core, I felt empty.
"Don't laugh. I know that's crazy. Over the course of these past months, I've gone through a world of emotions about my magic. I didn't like it, and didn't want to be a witch and all that.
But having it stolen made me realize I missed it, that I needed and wanted it. That darn pear bottom. Witchcraft was supposed to be my culture. That thought I didn't embrace, because I still didn't feel part of that whole thing. Meaning, I didn't have any friends outside of my family who were witches, and I didn't want them. But my magic, I needed it. It was as much a part of me as eating peanut butter and mayonnaise sandwiches on a warm summer day. Hey, don't knock it till you've tried it. I'm pretty sure 2 weeks of confinement is going to feel like a lifetime after about 5 minutes cooped up in here. Roman took my hand and lifted me from the chair. The force of his pull smacked my chest right into him. My hair tumbled into my face, and I'm sure I looked like a hot mess, what with the fight with the flower and then Pear Bottom coming in and making my world topsy-turvy. As I stared up into Roman's green eyes, all coherent thoughts slipped from my brain. "There was something you came to tell me?" He tugged a tendril of hair from my lips.
"Mm-hmm."
"What was it?" Roman dragged his gaze from me and leveled it on the others in the room.
"Let's go somewhere private."
I escorted him into the kitchen. They should stay in the living room for a while trying to figure stuff out. What's up?
"I've got a name."
The blood drained from my face. "Like a name?" Roman nodded. "Well, who is it?" Roman leaned against the wall and crossed his arms.
"Wanda LaRue."
The words spilled over my lips. "Wanda LaRue," I repeated. This was it, the name we'd been waiting for. 20 years ago, Roman's father, Richard Bane, now called Boo Bane, had watched this person murder Roman's mother and sisters. That same night, Boo had disappeared, only to reappear a few months ago. He had amnesia about the event, but details were slowly coming back to him. Several weeks ago, he'd remembered the face of one of the killers. He and Roman had been going over pictures of criminals, trying to match the face with a name, and they finally had it. "Wanda LaRue," I said again, letting the words sink into me. "Oh my gosh. Roman, this is huge." I crossed over and slid my arms around his waist. "What are you going to do now?" He grazed a hand down my back. Shivers lodged in my spine. I swear there was nothing that man could touch that didn't send me reeling.
"I was going to take you with me to find her," he said.
I staggered back. "You were?" He nodded. That dark expression returned to his eyes. I felt his pain wash over him and bleed into me. I cupped his cheek with my palm. "And now I can't go. I'm stuck here." Roman shrugged.
"It's okay. I'm a big boy. Pretty sure I can handle it."
He pulled my hand from his face and kissed the inside of my wrist.
"Great, you two are in love. How disgusting for the rest of us."
My paternal grandmother, Millie Jones, entered through the back door. She was a short, stout woman who wielded a cane like an extra limb. Though her clothes were brown and shapeless, Millie's expressively snarled face looked more wicked witch than kitten. I smiled. "Millie, it's good to see you too." She caned over to the kitchen table.
"What's with the earthquake, Toots?"
I sighed. "Huh, magical flower gone wrong." She eyed me skeptically.
"Where was Hazel?"
"Grandma was watching the whole thing," I said. "None of us could get control of it."
"I had to axe it down,"
Roman said. Millie studied us both for an uncomfortably long moment and said,
"I smell Jonathan Pearbottom. The room has that scent he leaves, like all life's been sucked from the room."
I sank into a chair. "Not quite, but close. We're on house arrest. My magic's been taken away for 2 weeks, and we can't leave." She shuffled into a seat and threaded her hands together.
"Welcome to the witching world. You haven't lived until you've gotten in trouble with the witch police."
"Great. I've lived. Now I'm ready to be done with it." Millie's eyes sparkled.
"Roman, Boo tells me you've got a name.
Roman paused.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?